Well, no, I should, because you want to do this, don't you?
Yeah, okay.
All right, the meeting of the House Hess Committee is called to order on March 14th. It is 3:05. I'm Con Bundy presiding, and with us today are Representative Pete Cott, Al Veazey, Gary Davis, Cynthia Tui, and Harley Olberg. Quorum is present. On today's calendar, we have the confirmation of Commissioner of Health and Social Services, Margaret Lowe, and then House Bill 412, Community Care Facilities, that'll be teleconferenced, and House Bill 356, Living Will and Medical Care Orders, in other words, do not resuscitate. We'll take up the confirmation of Commissioner Lowe first, and Commissioner, would you join us, please? Thank you, and welcome. Do we have questions from the committee? Or would you care to make an opening statement?
My opening statement, members of the committee, would be very brief. I've been in Alaska since 1951, and my major areas of training and professional expertise have been heavily in the field of education. I started working with people with special needs in Alaska back in the early 60s. In 1954, I walked up and down Fourth Avenue along with some other people carrying a placard that said, "I am a little man for statehood." And I guess what I want you to know is that I really believe in democracy. I really believe in having all the citizens of our state and our nation be involved in their government. I really believe that advocacy makes a big difference and that everyone should participate. So for now almost 45 years, I have been employed in the state of Alaska. And generally, my real employment, for which I was paid on a regular basis, has been in the field of education. But I have, along with that, involved myself in many, many areas of advocacy and participation. I've served on a lot of boards and commissions and committees at the local level, at the state level, at the national level. I've been a registered Republican my entire voting years. And overall, I feel as if by the time I came to this job, that I've had a lot of involvement, a lot of interaction with processes, with administration, and with learning about the needs of the people of Alaska. And I feel that our department is very highly the people department, and I find myself just trying to do the best I can with the resources I have, my personal resources, to listen and help everyone together problem solve to meet the needs of the state of Alaska's people. And I think beyond that, I'll be glad to answer questions.
All right. I thank you, Commissioner. I would note that for the record that Representative Betty Davis and Representative Nicolai joined us at about 8 minutes after 3. And from your statement about statehood, I'm glad to hear that, being you were part of the little man, that the little man was gender neutral.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't in those days.
Questions, Representative Tui.
Don't think he is still gender neutral. He's not. Commissioner B, I was thrilled when you were appointed, because I think you certainly are the right person for the right job. And I hope that, and this is probably political, I hope that if the man at the helm changes because of the election coming up, that I hope you will consider to continue, that you're not going to... I would hate to think that we, the state, would lose you because we might be changing. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, do you know what I'm saying? I would hate to see you... in fact, I was almost sorry you took the job, because your job is on the line when we have a new if and when, and we have a new leader, so I hope that you will continue if you feel such.
Well, I have not given myself or set myself any limit on how long I would keep this position. So, and I am not obligated in any way to leave here. So that's open.
Thank you.
Representative Nicolai.
This
is general neutral. You can call me madam.
Oh, dear. Chairman,
I'm in trouble now.
Commissioner to be Lowe, what do you think your, I'd like to know what your views are for the future of the behavioral health aid program and its potential for expansion and its success rate?
In the, which, I'm sorry, Representative Nicolai, I'm confused about which, are you talking about the human resources health program that's under our department, the rural?
Right.
I think that it is probably one of the most effective and most cost-effective programs we have going. I think it does all the right things in that it uses paraprofessional people. It trains people to become paraprofessional. It has the career ladder so that it is the incentive for people to start a rural village program, and yet if they find that they have skills in that area and inclination by taking the training, they have moved into beginning their college work. I think that's extremely important in that I feel so strongly that the Alaska Native rural areas must get their young people professionally trained. And every incentive we can give to get people, not always young people, I should say their own people, I think that, as I say, it's a very cost-effective program and it's very effective. We have only positive feedback. So I would put increase it, triple its size. I think we could do that just depending on what resources are available.
Excellent.
Representative Gary Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Lowe, you've been an acting director for a couple months and you're still here stumping for the job, so apparently there hasn't been any major hurdles that you've run into that you feel you can't deal with. But the man in the street is saying cut the budget, and your budget is one of the larger ones in the state government, which could mean the man on the street probably is looking for maybe $100 million to $200 million to be cut from your budget. Could you do that and still be here, do you think?
Let's see. Are you asking if I could live with it if we get cut, if the cut is that deep?
Yes.
Yes, I think I could. I have a couple of responses. One would be that not that I like having less resources. I would certainly much rather have endless amounts of resources, but I think we do as we do limit our resources more and more. We also are challenged to become more creative, to be more thrifty, if you will, to be sure that we're alleviating duplication and integrating services in the most cost-effective way. So to that extent, I think that we can make what we have go a little further. I think that all of us who are citizens of the state of Alaska need to understand that we are where we are because we were all a part of the picture. It wasn't just I or just you who got us to this point. So I feel that we all share in the fact that resources are very tight and that we are finding less and less that the state can provide.
I'd say that was a good answer. That sounds like most of our campaign promises or campaign discussions during the election.
Thanks. I was planning to use that. Now you've spoiled it. I'd like to acknowledge the presence of Representative Sanders. You're certainly welcome to join us at the table. You look comfortable where you are. Continuing on, Commissioner Lowe, on the vein of cutting money, I've recently received some information about travel, and not certainly just your budget, but a number of areas where I've seen travel has increased. At best, in some areas, it's maintained itself. And what we need to do is decrease, of course, because of the challenges facing us. Can you anticipate some opportunities to decrease the travel budget because you have a rather significant one?
Yes, I would like to respond, firstly, that when our budgets travel is presented often and especially to the public, for instance, perhaps not to you folks here, it's not really understood how much of that travel is used for clients, for moving children, for moving sick people, for moving mentally ill people, for moving juvenile offenders. So that a great share of our budget is actually its direct service to people, in that the travel, that all comes into one gross budget as travel. Cutting that down can only happen as we do a better and better job of providing services closer to home for more people, so that people will not need to be transported to centralized services or whatever. So that kind of budget cutting is very difficult to limit. Within our own department, I've given a lot of thought to travel. I think that we have in our department many, many staff who need to travel in order to do their job. We sort of look at it as the more they travel, the more thorough and the better job they can be doing. In other words, they're visiting sites more often, they're providing more technical assistance, they are interacting with the providers on a more regular basis, and many things like that, gathering committees together, et cetera. So person-to-person, face-to-face is always nice. But, yes, I can see where we can increase our teleconferencing, and I would look at our travel reductions coming in, taking a very, very careful look in each division at carefully just skimming down on how much our clinicians and our professional people travel. And there's no doubt in my mind, although it might not be our preference, that it can be cut back.
I would encourage you in that vein, because it is an area that the general public, as you point out, doesn't understand. The travel of your clients may be is undoubtedly very difficult to decrease, but the travel of people of your department, if we can use. So we're kind of right at the cutting edge of increased technology as far as being able to communicate it electronically, and people working out of their homes with their modems and all that sort of thing. I'm hoping we will look toward that goal, and I'm sure you share the frustration that all of us have experienced when we've been weathered in or weathered out of Juneau, and we could be being far more productive if we were simply communicating electronically.
Well, I think even the laptops help a lot. We do have some laptop computers, and even that is a step in the right direction toward making us more efficient, but we can go further.
Representative Nicolai.
I realize that was a tough question, because when I started thinking about travel, and I was thinking about the public health nurses that are in my district, and how much travel they have to do to just to get to the villages and see the well babies and things like that. It is a travel that is really important to those people. But what I was wondering, Ms. Lowe, is what are your ideas and strategies to deal with the problem of alcohol and suicide in the state of Alaska?
I think the things that have happened since I have been here, I think we have some things that I don't even really have any answers yet, and I've been struggling and struggling and looking and looking. One of those is inhalant abuse among young people. I think is a profoundly difficult thing, although there are some data out there that indicate that a real concentration of educational program, which we haven't done enough of, that it can be reduced through young people and kids really becoming more informed of how dangerous that is. I think that the programs that work well for us in alcohol and drug abuse. Again, I think the ratio of people and the personal involvement are the best programs, the programs that are closest to home or in the home city or small town or village. The more we can do there with people that are staying there, that will continue to act as a support. I think there's a tremendous good use, again, of paraprofessionals with more regionalized professional support. And I feel that where we do the best and what looks the best in outcome is where the most personal continuous contact between a person and another person on a steady, ongoing. I think that those programs, we don't allow them enough time. I think that a person to get into recovery, it's worrying for the family, it's worrying for the professionals. 6, 8, 10, 12 years is nothing. It's a matter of staying there and being there. It's a long program, but I think that those are the most effective things. I think it takes a lot more of everything than what we have so far in the state put into it. I think it's possible. And the other thing I would say for towns and cities is their own self-actualization, that they get involved and say, we're going to turn this around. And I think we see a lot, but they need support to do that. They can't do it. A city or a town can't do that by itself.
Thank you.
Commissioner, you've certainly been an active participant in education and now social services for some time. Do you feel we're making progress? Do you see us reaching our goal of encouraging personal responsibility for one's own physical and mental health? Are we making progress?
I feel certainly that there is progress, and I have a long way to look back now, so I can look back a very long way, and that allows you to see more progress than looking at a very short period. But I think that the state of the art, I think that there are we know a lot now about treating problems. We have a lot of options. We don't just have one way to approach alcoholism or one way to approach mental illness. So there certainly are a lot of gains in that direction. I feel that the issue of families, of keeping families together and family support is a really important area where I think we are making progress in our state, and that crosses almost all the areas of our department, where families who have a mentally ill family member, families who have a developmentally disabled family member, families who are dealing with an elderly person. In all of those areas, alcohol, drug treatment, whatever, we're finding that the more the family support is in there and needs to be built into the treatment, I think there's a lot of progress in that area and sort of the insights and the way we approach. I think there's a lot of gain in community, in keeping people in the most normalized area they can. Last week when the Key campaign was here, I couldn't even count how many of my former students whose parents had been told 35 or 30 years ago to put them in an institution, that they would never do anything. Some of them are vested in unions in Anchorage. Many of them have been employed gainfully for 15 years now. So I think there's a lot of progress. Is that specific enough, or do you want something more specific?
I guess I was asking whether we should be optimistic or pessimistic, and I think you said
let's be optimistic. And I think the more we learn, the more we can overcome scarcity of resources also, because I think the more options we have and the more alternatives, the more we can put things together.
Well, you hit the key there, because, and I think optimism is important, because obviously resources are scarce and not apt to improve in the near term. And so if people have the can-do attitude, money won't be such a limiting factor. Other questions for the commissioner?
Representative Cobb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Margaret, certainly we appreciate you stepping forward in this challenging opportunity. I just kind of want to follow up on a question that Representative Nicolai asked, and that is, we do have a serious drug and alcohol problem in the state. And I think there's a lot of people out there that believe we've been throwing good money after what I would call them, sometimes they refer to as bad solutions. Do you have any real solutions that will turn that trend around?
I don't have any solutions that would turn that trend around with less resources. I think that if I can go the other way for a minute, I think that we have been too thrifty in the resources we have put in. I think that it is a very, very long treatment system. Anyone who has either had personal or professional or paraprofessional involvement with the issue of addiction and chemical abuse, it's a very long process. So that, as you know, people, once they are in recovery, generally the philosophy is they stay in recovery the rest of their life. They can never forget that they've been addicted. And so I think that probably, although it looks as if we have put a lot of resources in the state in recent years, and we aren't cutting down, one of the things we forget is our population is growing. Young people are getting into the use of chemicals earlier. That is, they get an earlier start off, and that gets into a level of severity earlier. And I think that it takes a lot of resources for that. And I think that if I had my do what I wanted, I would highly prioritize it as an area that we'd put a lot of resources in. And really, because it's a very, very costly process and a very, very long one. And I think that all of the alternatives that are available work. 12-step certainly is still the main. There are people that say that you don't need to have total abstinence. The philosophy in our department is generally abstinence is the base of our programs. We have a pilot going in Juneau with acupuncture, one small piece of a grant. Different things work for different people. And I think there's a great potential and a great future, but I can't say it other than to say it takes a lot of resources.
Thank you.
A related question, certainly related to alcohol abuse, that is incredibly high teen pregnancy rate. We have the rate of STDs and AIDS that we have. Where do you see us going in that direction? Are we making progress?
I think that we need to be doing, I think we are doing a good job in terms of surveillance and in terms of educational materials and treatment. I think, again, we need a lot more. It takes, I just feel that it takes an awful lot. It's more than a child having a week's training in fourth grade or a week's lessons and say what this disease or that can do or what addiction does or anything. I think it's got to be a constant, ongoing. I think people have to be inundated with materials all the time. I don't know how you even counteract all of the modeling we see. And I'm sorry to pick up on the much maligned television, but I believe it, that all of the modeling that is picked up in terms of what's okay, and then to counteract that, again, I think it's costly. I think citizens, we could do a lot more in organizing, getting more volunteers involved and doing more person-to-person kind of educating in that. And again, that takes some mobilizing. I think we're starting, but I don't think we're doing near enough.
It might be helpful for every Hollywood production we have on RatNet, we could have an educational program to go hand in hand.
Well, I had an experience this weekend. I've been in rural Alaska, and I switched my TV between RatNet and public television, and I found the quality on public television to be definitely higher, I think, than RatNet. I was sort of disappointed, actually, to trying to perceive that. So I think that somehow counteracting a lot of what is out there is important, but I think it just takes a lot of continuous materials and contact with people.
Representative Tui, you had a question.
Just a quick question. You know that we're on the edge of a full-blown epidemic in the villages of HIV/AIDS. Mm-hmm. We have now cases in almost every of your major villages that are documented AIDS, not HIV, AIDS. I would really like to see something done with RatNet that focuses on HIV, because that's obviously the way to get to the villages. I'd like to see some resources somewhere put into that. But my concern is, are you, and I know Dr. Nakamura is, are you ready for this epidemic as it comes? I mean, we are going to have an epidemic that is going to be devastating.
I don't think we are. To be perfectly honest with you, I think that we have planning to do, that we need to. We have our Healthy Alaskans 2000. The document is now almost back from the printer, et cetera. We have those kinds of things, but we haven't really done the planning to and costed out the planning for what it really involves. I think we have a lot more work to do in that.
I urge you to get with INET, the Indian Health Service, because that's going to be
okay.
A sleeping time bomb here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Other questions from the committee? Hearing none, what is the pleasure of the committee?
I don't know how you phrase this.
Well, to pass Commissioner Lowe's name to the speaker with the committee member's individual recommendation would probably be the preferred phrase.
So moved.
Mr. Chairman, I would make that motion with my personal, for the record, my personal strong support for the confirmation of Commissioner Lowe.
It's been moved that we pass Commissioner Lowe's name to the speaker with the committee's individual recommendations. Are there any objections?
Objection.
Would you call the roll, please, Laura Lee?
Mr. Jacob,
you'd like to speak to your objection?
Yes. The normal format for this motion is to pass the nomination from the committee without any specific recommendation.
I believe it. Individual recommendations, but I could be corrected on this. Lynn?
We used individual recommendations on our boards and commissions last year. It doesn't give you any intent once it gets here.
It's your call, Mr. Chairman.
It's not an indication of your intent to vote on the floor. It's if I might read this for the committee. Dear Madam Speaker, in accordance with AS 39.05.080, the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee reviewed the qualifications of the following individual and recommends the appointment be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services, Margaret Lowe. This does not reflect any intent by any member to vote for or against this individual during the further sessions for the purpose of confirmation.
I'd make a motion to that effect.
Well, I believe that was Representative Olper's motion. Do you maintain your objection?
I think we should call a roll. Yeah.
Call a roll. Laura Lee.
Representative Cynthia Tui?
Yes.
Representative Con Bundy?
Yes.
Representative Gary Davis?
Yes.
Carried away.
Representative Al Beasy?
Yes.
Representative Peacock?
Yes.
Representative Harley Olbert?
Yes.
Representative Betty Davis?
Yes.
Representative Ryan Nicolai?
Yes.
Representative Tom Barnes?
Thank you, Commissioner Lowe. Your confirmation will go forward from this committee to the speaker.
Thank you. May I make one comment?
Certainly.
The people that are here, a lot of them are from the Bridges Campaign for Mental Health, and I just wanted you to know that many of them come because they had not been at this kind of a hearing before, and also I appreciate their being here. I thought it was very nice of them to take the time, so I'd like you to know that they were here.
Thanks as well for participating.
We're lucky to have you, Commissioner.
That brings us to House Bill 412. Oh, I'm sorry. We are revising our schedule just a little bit. We will take up now House Bill 356, Living Wills and Medical Care Orders. Representative Toohey is the prime sponsor. Is there further discussion of House Bill 356?
If you will notice in your packet, we had some questions that were delivered by the director of the IREMS Interior, Craig Lewis. We followed through on exploring these new or ideas. We went through the legal department. We went through, checked them with our expert advisor, Mark, and we found that we had we were really right on the mark as far as the bill goes. So if there's not any further, I testimony is closed.
Well, let me see if there is there any additional public testimony concerning House Bill 356. Seeing no further public testimony, public testimony is closed. Representative Olberg.
So, what became of the recommendation? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What became of the recommended changes by Mr. Lewis?
They were not accepted because we went through all of them with Mark Johnson.
Representative,
thank you.
Yes.
And in here, you'll notice we have an answer to these, to the questions we went through back to legal. Yes. And they were not considered valid.
Okay.
Now, if there's anybody that would like to question that, that was fine. Mark, would you like to come and testify for the?
Well, Dean, I closed public testimony.
Oh,
I would ask him to respond to Representative Olberg's question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Johnson. I'm chief of the Emergency Medical Services Section, and in answer to Representative Olberg's question, I, in fact, spoke with Mr. Lewis this morning, and he's agreed to withdraw any of his objections on this bill. We agreed that some of his particular issues would be addressed through the process of regulation and implementation. And so he's agreed not to pursue his issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? House Bill 356. Seeing none, what's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Betty Davis.
I move that we move House Bill 356 out of the committee with individual recommendations and accomplishing fiscal note.
It's been moved that House Bill 356 move out of HES committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so moved.
Thank you.
That now brings us to House Bill 412, Community Care Facilities. And Commissioner Lowe, are you planning to testify on this bill? All right. And for the record, your name, please.
My name is Pat O'Brien. I'm from the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Family and Youth Services, and have been involved in licensing for more than 20 years, if you can believe that. I appreciate both co-chairs for getting this on the schedule. It's important to us. And the first comment I'd like to make is that you have an expert among you. Representative Betty Davis formerly did licensing for our department a number of years ago. So if you have any special questions from a licensor, you might turn to her.
I wasn't working out of a horse and buggy.
licensing of programs for vulnerable populations is an important public function, and it's one that we've had some difficulty keeping up with in recent years. What we're trying to accomplish with this bill is to work smarter. And I think after some of the questions that you asked, Commissioner Lowe, I'm glad that we're offering a bill that will help us work smarter by consolidating a number of licensing procedures into one place and making it easier for licensors. Right now we have close to 2,000 facilities. I think last check it was 1,900 and some facilities. You have in your packet a pie chart that shows the kinds of facilities that we license. You can see that child foster homes take up the majority of the pie chart, and child care facilities are the second largest number. But some of those smaller slices of the pie are very complex. What this bill will do when it is accompanied by the passage of the assisted living bill, which you formerly heard, will be to remove adult licensing from the Division of Family and Youth Services. If that bill fails, then this bill has provision for us to continue licensing adult facilities until an assisted living bill could pass. And it will cause our division to focus clearly, the combination of those, on children and families. Efficiency will be advanced by combining a variety of regulations. Right now, express what you are supposed to do in the licensing process, more than 40 pages, and they're not always the same because they were promulgated under different commissioners and at different times, so that it's very, very complex if you're a person in a one-person office, in a field office, and have all these different regulations that you have to meet. So what we're trying to do is consolidate it, make it easier for that person, and also with the private agency staff that perform licensing. We work with about 12 private agencies that also perform licensing on a few facilities. A couple other features that we're trying to get across here are a shared partnership both with parents and with private agencies. We want to make it more clear to parents that they have a shared responsibility with the state in monitoring the care of their children. And finally, in working with private agencies, they've asked for liability protection to be placed specifically in the statute. We've been telling them they have it, but they're uncomfortable with that, and there is the liability protection in here for them. I'm just going to highlight a few of the features that mostly the changes that we're trying to build into this bill. And let me say that for the most part, we're not making a major shift at all in licensing. What we're doing is consolidating and making it more efficient, combining all those various processes into this bill. We've been told by some attorneys that we had quasi legislation in our regulations, and that what we had in regulations really ought to be in statute, and that's why we've brought this forward. So in going through the section by section briefly, because I know we have people on teleconference, feel free to interrupt me if you have questions on any particular area. The first sections, 1, 2, and 3, really make no change at all other than the numbering and to make it compatible with child care laws, the daycare assistance program and child care grant. Section 4 is, again, conforming amendments. We do make one little change in here. We would like to be able to use our less onerous grievance procedure rather than a full-blown administrative hearing for something like a variance, so that we've outlined it that only the most serious enforcement steps that we take will go to an administrative hearing under the Administrative Procedures Act. Section 5 gets into what licensing is all about. We've included a new title. Instead of institutions, it would be called community care licensing. We've informally been calling it that for years. And it's in this section that we clarify the role of licensing, the responsibility of informing parents what their role is, and we include the provision for voluntary licensure, which we've had for a number of years. and we do that on a time available basis. Section 6, under the powers of the department, we've added the ability to charge fees. We've known that was coming, and we suspect that we will be promulgating regulations that will have fees at some time in the future. We just wanted to be sure we have the authority in statute to promulgate rules that would allow us to charge fees. powers of the department is we have contracted with agencies to perform licensing evaluations. If you've got a village of 300 or 400 individuals, there's no agency out there that might perform that evaluation, so we've added a provision for us to be able to enter into agreements with individuals as well as agencies to perform these evaluations. You need a family child care home in those small villages. You need foster homes in those small villages, and we think this makes good sense. There's a section on the on delegating powers to municipalities. The only municipality that has assumed that responsibility is the municipality of Anchorage. We've worked with them on this bill. And essentially, the bill reflects the practice now in the municipality of Anchorage that they will adopt the state standards and additional standards that meet or exceed the state standards, and that's what they've done right now. Section 7 has to do with applicability and exemptions. This is an important section, and I know it's a long section in the bill, but it pretty much reflects current practice with the exceptions that I'll point out. The four exceptions are there was an exception for occasionally placing a child for foster care or adoption, and we've removed that exception. As far as we know, attorneys no longer are doing that without going through a placement agency, so there'll be no impact. We think this is good for children. The exemption for governmentally operated programs has been removed. Only one local government, as I mentioned, the municipality of Anchorage, actually regulates daycare centers, and they do not operate any programs. The age of a child has been changed from 16 years to 18 years of age, and as far as we can tell, there'll be no known impact or no programs impacted by that change. And probably the most important change is there was a clause in there that allowed you to operate for 90 days without a license, which undercut the whole idea of licensing. The idea of licensing is to get in there before children are in care, reduce risk, check things out, and then have children come into care. So we think that's an important amendment. Then I'm not going to go through sections 8, 9, and 10 because they're pretty much standard, what we have now. The one I might mention, section 10, orientation and training, we made that applicable to any facility and all facilities. Only foster parents are included in the current statute when, in fact, every facility type is required to have orientation and training. I will mention on the record section, it's very important, I think, for people to know what is confidential and what isn't. And we've had a lot of conflicting attorney advice, and we're feeling it's very important to spell out. For the most part, licensing records are open. There are a few things that should be closed in the licensing records. For instance, a foster parent, when they apply for a license, give us very personal background kinds of information about themselves. And we don't think that information ought to be open to the public. So we've put in provisions that would allow us to protect certain very personal pieces of information like that. Under monitoring, we have a paragraph that encourages parents to participate in monitoring with the state, that requires the state to, through the child care provider, give the parents a summary of the standards so they know what to monitor, and we think this just makes good sense. Then there's a renewal process, and one thing I forgot to mention was that we have a lot of support across this state for having an inspection before every license is issued, and so we've built in a requirement there that there be an inspection, an on-site inspection, before any license is issued. The first provisional, the first biennial, and all renewals will all require the department to do an on-site inspection. On the off-year monitoring, because you have a two-year license, in practice we do go out on that off-year as well, but we've given ourselves the option where we can't get out there to allow a self-monitoring report to suffice. And that's important in field offices where we have a vacancy and simply can't always get to it. Section 12 addresses complaints, investigation, enforcement. A few of the highlights there are that the complainant will get a copy of the report if they request it. A very important feature is that retaliatory action is prohibited here. Often an employee of a residential child care facility or a daycare center is afraid to tell when they see a violation of regulations, and this would protect them if they chose to report a violation of the regulations. Then the array of enforcement actions that are only now in our licensing manual are actually included in the statute. Or in the bill before you. Section 13 has
Sure. I'm going to lose a train of thought.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Inspection costs. You have a fiscal note of $65,000 for 95 and $35,000 for 96. You're going to have to inspect every new facility online. That doesn't show up in any of the other fiscal notes. Should that be there?
No, it should not be there. Actually, what we're doing is not changing current practice in this bill. We are simply building into this bill what we're doing right now so that there should not be an increased cost for inspections. What has happened, Representative Tuohy, is that we have an overload of facilities on a number of our licensors. In fact, some of them, I just checked in Southwest, are carrying twice the number of, like, if they're licensing family child care homes, twice as many as they should to meet standards. When we lose the adult licensing, that will give us some badly needed relief. Then in addition to that, just simply consolidating these procedures will also give us more relief. But we're not going to be doing more than we are now, so we did not attach a fiscal note to the actual activity that our staff will be carrying out.
Mr. Chairman, another question. Do you have the questionnaire or to apply for a license, a questionnaire will be sent, is that correct, to these facilities?
Chairman, we have an application that, in the case of a foster home, a child foster home, does have a questionnaire. The application itself is one page. However, there are different attachments for depending on the facility type. We try to keep it, I'm thinking of foster care now. That's a one-page application, and there is a background questionnaire on that. I guess 5-6 pages altogether. And that would include the criminal history background information.
That's the next thing I was getting to. You do have a criminal. Is this a self-signing up, or do you question, do you look through police records for this?
Madam Chairman, what we do in a child foster home licensing situation, it may either be an emergency or it may be something that's planned ahead. In all cases, we get a signed application, we get a personal history background statement. They must complete a sheet that gives their background, either child protection background or criminal history background, and then they must get their fingerprints rolled. We process those through the Department of Public Safety, and in the case of child foster homes, the state pays for the processing of that criminal history background check.
Thank you. As long as we have you stopped on this fiscal note, you're already doing these things. Now, is this new money we're talking about in the fiscal note, or is this simply transfer to cover the things you're already doing?
The fiscal note, Chairman Bundy, is to cover the transition and to give us an opportunity to get a little more creative with our working with the providers and developing our revised regulations. With nearly 2,000 facilities, and in the adult facilities we'll lose only around 100, we're going to have to change 5-6 sets of regulations at once. And in order to do that, we hope to have a task force of those who would be affected. And as part of that, what we hope to do also is to, for instance, you look at fire safety in a foster home, you look at fire safety in a family child care home. There's no reason why those rules should be different, and we hope to look at some of those things that are applicable across all facility types and get people to agree on what should be looked at, including making the efficiency go even further. Then We'll have to promulgate those regulations, draft them, go through the public hearing process, and hopefully we'll have some training that, and we plan to stretch that $65,000 in the first year, and I think it's $35,000 the second year, quite a ways, and do regional training for both licensors and those who would be affected by licensing with that funding. In addition, we plan to commit strong department resources, including myself and a number of other people in the state office, to work on this to do a good job of improving the process.
While we have you stopped, I wanted to note that we have Anchorage and Fairbanks on teleconference, and as soon as you finish with your testimony, we'll be going on to those people on teleconference. And let me just observe that you mentioned the statutory ability to charge fees, and we're looking at nearly $100,000 here. This might be the time for you to become creative and see if fees could be involved.
I'm well aware of that.
And take care of this fiscal note. Go ahead, if you'd like to finish your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to mention Section 13 is the licensing of adult facilities. We hope that section does not go into effect. If the assisted living bill passes, we won't have that section in effect. I will just mention once again that the liability is in there, and the definitions are so important to change. Right now, the definition of a child care facility is a nursery. And we need to get rid of those real antique terms and update them. Institutions we now call and have for a number of years called residential child care facilities. So it will be nice to get that kind of updating. I just want to very briefly mention that the department brought forward four amendments, and I understand Representative Cott has some amendments which I had an opportunity to look at earlier. Would you like me to talk about those now or go to testimony?
Yeah, let's keep our focus on the main bill at this point, and so we don't keep these people on teleconference thinking they've been forgotten.
Right.
If I could go to the teleconference, we have one other person here in Juneau to testify, and then let's come back to the amendments.
Thank
if
you very
you don't
much.
Mind. In Anchorage, I don't have a last name, but I have a Lar, who's a representative.
That is a last name.
Oh, okay. I have just a last name only. And Representative Alaska Education Young Children.
Larry. Yes, I'm here representing Fundy, and thank you very much. I am Larry Preston of Alaska Education for the Education of Young Children. Alaska EYC is the professional organization for those who care and educate young children for 8 years. Alaska EYC represents nearly 800 professionals statewide, including military, private not-for-profit, specialized care, child care, family child care, Head Start, school-age child care, public school staff, family, and university staff. We support HB 412, the community care license, providing the fiscal note of $100,000 for a statewide task force to assist the department in implementation is also passed. Early childhood professionals welcome regulation that reduces the risk for young children in out-of-home care and education. We believe protecting young children and reassuring their families through regulation is a critical role of government. I would hasten to add about your comment of charging fees. I suspect that many of us in Alaska feel that we have not paid our fair share for a number of years. On the other hand, I am a little concerned that, again, it seems to me that we are looking at one of our most vulnerable populations, and people who care and educate young children are paid much less than parking lot attendants or garbage collectors. So I guess one of my concerns is that if a fee is placed on this licensing, that fee is going to have to be passed on
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there questions? Representative Veazey.
Yes. You commented that child care workers are paid less than garbage collectors. Which job do you think is more difficult to perform?
Oh, I have no question that caring for a young child from 8 to 10 hours a day is a far more difficult task. It may appear to be lots and lots of fun, and it is in many ways, but that's an extraordinarily high skill level when you're caring for someone else's child.
My question then would be, why don't those people get jobs as garbage collectors instead of working in child care facilities?
Well, I guess it's because there are some among us who find that our real talents are working with the very young child and their families. That's why we went to college, that's why we have the degrees that we have, and we choose to stay in that position.
Thank you.
Moving on to Fairbanks, Nancy Johnson, please. Is Fairbanks on the line?
Can you hear me?
Can now. Go ahead, please.
My name is Nancy Johnson, and I am an employee of the Division of Family and Youth Services, and I've worked in licensing for about 23 years. I support the legislation that's before you, and I would concur that licensing represents a very vital preventive function of state government. The licensing workers, however, often have to work with several different types of licensing. Some are able to specialize, but most of them work with more than one type, especially in rural areas. And this legislation is designed to simplify the basics of the regulations that they have to understand and implement. It also includes many of the ideas and techniques that are being used in other parts of the country. Alaska has always been supportive of belonging to National Association for Regulatory Administrators, and so we've been able to attend some national conferences and participate in some projects that have allowed key personnel to keep up with some of these national trends and recommendations. And lastly, I would reinforce what Pat O'Brien said about this bill allowing us to more easily work with community groups in partnership where they would like to be active in recruiting and evaluating service providers. This is a technique that we have found has been very successful where it's been implemented, and this bill will make it easier for us to do that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for my clarification, if this bill were to pass, you would be personally involved in setting up these study groups?
I would expect to be, yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Toohey.
Thank you. Pat, you have a $45,000 fiscal note for traveling. What are the chances, and in, this year it's that's a silver bullet. What are the chances of using the people on hand locally, like the public health nurses or the community health aides or people within the communities that these licensing are required, sending them the questionnaires and letting them do it rather than spend the $45,000 for travel?
Madam Chairman, the travel is specifically for the task force. And if we don't get the travel, we won't be able to meet face-to-face. I've worked with task forces in Juneau and had separate ones in Anchorage. What we're really hoping for, and if we're forced to, we could pare it down, but we're really hoping to get Bush involvement in this. There is a lot of new federal money going into some of the Native organizations, and they are very interested in partnerships with us, and I would like their involvement and involvement from each of the communities, and the only way we can do some face-to-face is with some travel money.
Thank you.
We have also in Fairbanks, Mary, Representative Veazey, excuse me. Mary, we'll come to you in a moment.
Yes, I'm regressing a little bit since I got a chance to ask you a question I missed earlier. In Section 7, there's something about changing the age of children from 16 to 18. I was not able to find that.
Through the chair to Representative Veazey, that's in the definition, actually. I think I jumped over in terms of a change. The definition of a child is up to age 18, and it then affects the application of the statute.
We have a definition section. I missed that too then.
Page
19. Okay. I'd like to ask why we're changing the definition of a child from 18 to 16. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Through the chair to Representative Veazey. We license a number of programs that serve children ages 16, 17, and even over age 17 in foster homes. So it made sense to just include that age range since we are basically regulating facilities with children that age range in them.
So you really are referring to minors,
to
unemancipated minors.
That's correct.
So. Representative Tuohy.
And on that same subject, are you also including developmentally disabled in that? I mean, that's why the 18.
Yes, Madam Chairman. And since adult licensing has been in our division, we have found that children move from a child foster home then and it becomes an adult foster home. And I suspect if the assisted living bill passes, we will continue to collaborate with them to make sure that there's a smooth transition there.
I'd like to go to Fairbanks now and on the teleconference. And Mary Matthews, please.
I am representing the Fairbanks Resource Agency, which is an agency that works with developmentally disabled children and their families. And we also work with developmentally disabled adults. And I would like to say that I am for passage of this bill, and I am happy to see the clarification on immunity from liability for private agencies. It means a lot to us to have that clarified since we work hard to help with the licensing process. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Matthews? Hearing none, we thank you for your testimony. Here in Juneau, Jody Engelman.
I'm Jody Engelman, and I'm the Executive Director of Juneau Youth Services, and we have four facilities that are licensed under these regulations, and we're here to support the change in regulation. It would be very nice if there was consistency among the various types of regulations so that we had it would ease up my job, and I'm sure the licensing worker's job if the definitions were consistent and the first parts of the regulations were consistent. We would also believe that the licenses were, or the regulations we're currently working under are pretty old-fashioned, and they don't take into consideration sort of the changing concerns we have and the changing services that are going to be as well as that are offered right now. So essentially we're supportive of this bill. We're also supportive of the fiscal note so that folks can communicate with the division about their needs and make sure that their concerns are heard by the division.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
In order to deal with the amendments that have been proposed both by the department and by Representative Cott, we ought to adopt the House Bill 421 as a working document?
Why would we do that, Mr. Chairman? That's the document before us.
That's the document before us.
Just wanted to see if anybody was paying attention.
That's right. Thank you very much. Would someone move amendment number one, and we will have the department discuss it.
So moved. Mr. Chairman, is that my amendment?
Hess department number one.
Okay.
It will, unless you think it's more productive to start with your amendments, Representative Cott.
I think it's more productive to start with mine.
Department amendment number one has been moved, and might I ask you to speak to the amendment, please?
There are a number of child care facilities on military bases in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, and also on Kodiak Island where the Coast Guard is. In all of those locations, they have available a staff person, one or more staff persons, who both perform evaluation of those facilities and provide training to them. They're better staffed than the state is. So we stopped regulating in those a number of years ago, and we wanted to make clear that we were not going to regulate on those large bases or on Kodiak Island. So the purpose of this amendment is to make clear that not only the military bases, but the Coast Guard is not included. However, we made a side agreement with the Coast Guard with relative to small communities like, I think, Sitka and Cordova, where they have a number of homes that provide family child care, where we've previously licensed those homes. They have no ability to do it, and we said we would not stop. Time available, we would continue performing that service in those smaller ones and under voluntary licensure. But that's kind of side to the amendment. Basically, we want to be sure to exclude the Coast Guard as well.
Discussion of the amendment or questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Representative Easy.
I guess I just wonder why is it necessary to designate the ownership of the property. I'm thinking I'm not aware of any facilities other than housing of the government that are on private property, but the government can indeed lease facilities. And I think it's not the ownership of the real property that you're interested in. It's the guidelines that the federal agencies operate under that you're trying to not re-regulate something that's more highly regulated than you are. So I just question your wording. I don't really have a problem with it, but.
Through the chair, I might just respond that this was the wording given to me by Commander Gary Palmer. We both wondered if the witches on federal property really was necessary, and he recommended that we include it to be absolutely clean, so I didn't object.
Further discussion of amendment number one? Are there any objections to amendment number one? Hearing none, amendment number one is accepted or adopted. Brings us to department amendment number two.
Move amendment number two.
Amendment number two has been moved, and would you speak to it, please?
We simply made a mistake in drafting. In fact, we made two of them, and I would encourage you to adopt this amendment to ensure that we're exempting relatives from becoming licensed. Representative Cott will be introducing an amendment that will put in a paragraph or a subsection 8 that we would also support because we didn't go quite far enough to get relatives exempted.
Any questions about amendment number 2, Representative Cott?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would offer a friendly amendment to amendment number 2, which is my amendment number 1.
And could we see that amendment?
And you should have copies. Yeah. And it does add a number 8, exempting solely child caregivers relative of all the children. So in other words, grandmother's got 5 children, grandchildren, she should be exempt.
and page 20, line 25, we've also included it. We've inserted great grandparents.
This is unrelated to the one.
Representative Toohey.
Meeting relative.
Just a question on that. If I maybe it addresses this somewhere. If there's a woman who's caring for her, say, three grandchildren, and there is a four-child limit for, is there a limit on how many biological grandchildren you can care for? If she's caring for four grandchildren, can she then have four or more daycare? Total of eight.
Chairman Toohey, I'd answer it this way. Anyone can care for four children, whether they're related or not, without a license. That's a total exemption. We do not want to license homes where there are relationships. We just, as a matter of course, we want that exempt. So that's why we added the clause in ours. It's similar to what we have in current daycare regulations. Then you may care for up to eight children as a family child care home, and those could all be related and shouldn't be licensed. But in order for that to occur, Representative Cott's amendment is also needed, amendment to my amendment. We just blew it on this one.
Just clarify, you don't need a license to take care of
any related
four
child
children.
Or for four children related.
So you can have
not.
Eight children in the house and it doesn't, and you don't need a license.
You can have four children in the house and you don't need a license. If they're, you can have additional children. Four of them can't be related to you, but you could have as many related to you.
And you don't need a license. I mean, you can have eight children in the house. Four of them are your grandchildren, and four you're caring for in the neighborhood. So you have eight children of eight children. You do not need a license.
Am I blowing this, Jenny? Okay.
Would you like to ask a different question?
No, I don't. Well, I want the answer to that question. No, I'm not.
Seems that's very unfair.
You can take care of four children without a license who are not related to you, and you're living there.
Right.
And then you can take care of additional
four.
Related children.
Well, unrelated children.
No limit.
No limit.
No limit.
There used to be a limit. When did
only
you
limited by your productivity.
Excuse me.
If all the children are related, then there is no limit. That's what there's no limit on.
But if you take care of four children, you can take care of four unrelated children.
Yeah, now
without a license. Mm-hmm. And then you have four grandchildren come and visit, mm-hmm. and you're taking care of them also. That means you have eight children in the house. I mean, you're not saying that this person has to have a license to have eight children in the house. Thank you. After that, I don't think you need that.
The answer was no, according to Commissioner.
Well, what I was going to read is what we have in current regulations, because it is confusing, and we've studied this a long time. If you don't mind, I'll go ahead and read. Instead of your amendment, right now what we have in regulations is a facility is exempt if they're regularly providing child care only to a child or children related to the resident caregiver. So if they're only related, they're exempt from licensure, or if they're providing care for four children, related or not related. And I'm sorry, but I'm a little confused about your statement, so I'll
I'm
take
sure it's clear.
Okay.
It's clear. I mean, you, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a flock of kids, but no more than four who
being
are
paid,
not related
that are paying
to you.
Right.